Japanese Labor Prison is the name of this podcast, this project, I would rather call it, really, in order to just record my personal account of being sent to Japanese Labor Prison. However, this project will go a little further than that, and it'll go into my history and why I was there. And then I suppose my relationship with Japan will be the main beginning of the story, because it starts off when I was 2 years old. We won't get into the Japanese labor prison for a while, but there's going to be build up as to why I've been going to Japan all my life and how we got there. And I appreciate you guys listening, tuning in, and giving me feedback. I did a podcast before. This is a personal project. I won't plug the other one, but, you know, this is a story that I want to put out there. So this will be a little personal project. I don't know how fast I'll finish it. I'm going to try to finish it kind of fast. I don't know how to publish anything. So coming back to Anchor, I'm going to build it on here. And I hope you guys enjoy it. It's a pretty crazy story. I'm no longer allowed in Japan because of this story. So just stick with me, bear with me through the history of it as to why I was in Japan, how I got there. Basically, my father's military ended up there. I've been going there all my life. He still lives there to this day. His relationship with Japan is fine. He's key part of this story. And then I'm gonna go into this history of everything, where I was going back and forth, why I got to Japan, how long I've been going to Japan. I've loved Japan. Japan is a great place. It's a shame that I'm not allowed there anymore. All right, enjoy the show. Test. July 4th, Independence Day. That was the last day I saw my son. Or at least, I guess that was the day after I dropped him off. But by that time, the next year, I was in solitary confinement the whole time. Except for whenever, like, I was in Guam. Like, I went to Tokyo, then Guam. And then, like, I flew the next day. Like, I flew to Japan I left San Diego on the 5th, and then I got to San Francisco on the 5th, and then I had to stay the night in the airport because that plane crashed. I should have just went home right then. I wish maybe God was trying to tell me something. Like, two little Asian girls died. You might need to go back home. I hate to make a joke out of those two girls losing their lives. Rest in peace, because they were young teenagers with a bright future ahead of them, because they were on, like, some type of team of some sort. I don't know what team. I think they're on some type of sports team. I don't know, but it was kind of tragic, and I should have saw it as an omen, but I didn't. I wanted to go see Kaede, and I wanted to go see my family in Japan. I love Japan, so I was more than happy to go to Japan. I wish I could take Forchi, but he was just a little too young to be floating around in Japan and then demanding that. I'd need a babysitter a lot, and I'd probably abuse that babysitter. Like, Noriko would be all pissed at me, and you come get your kid. I don't need all that, because I was having a little too much fun. I knew I would, especially with Kaede, too, because we were going to go out for sure. We were going to go out. But whenever I got to Japan, I got arrested almost immediately, because I went to Guam, and I got arrested that night. And then I did get to go out for a week. So I guess I went the whole time, but pretty much almost a year, 11 and a half months, I was due to be in solitary confinement, to give you guys a little, I've been arrested and moved to, I guess I didn't really recap on last episode, but I think if you're this far along, you'd rather just move along. But I'd been arrested, moved to county, and I think that's where I left y'all off. And now I'm in county, and this is in Tokyo. It's Tokyo. You can look this place up. It's like Tokyo, I don't know, like, it's the courthouse. Like, they got a courthouse there. Everything's there. It's a big, tall, huge building. I was pretty high up too. I don't remember, but you can see most of the city.
It was in Tachikawa. I remember that too, because there's a Tachikawa base. There's like a Japanese Air Force type base, but it was mostly helicopters. But that's still, I guess, considered an Air Force. I don't know, but it used to be our base. Like, well, it was their base. We took it over, but whenever we won the war, or whatever, then we eventually gave it back to them. And on my dad's base, Yokota base, you go to Air Force base is not too far away. So he wasn't too far. Neither was my stepmom and neither was my sister. And they visited. But whenever I got to this room, like, I'm no longer in a group room, which was a lot better because you had people to talk to throughout the day. You're going to sit there. I had a dude trying to learn everything about me, just speak to me. And then also the Yakuza dude ended up showing up there. He ended up coming to the county too, but you can't talk to anybody in county. You're not allowed to talk to anybody except for the like guard that comes to your door. You're not allowed. There's no loud talking. There's no like tapping and like going, just like talking down the hallway and stuff like that. You might have someone that lives across from you that's willing to look at you in the window, but that, like, fuck that. I don't want to look at nobody. I look at you whenever I'm walking by, I guess, give you a little what's up. But I'm not, I don't know, nobody talked. There's not enough people willing to break that rule for it to just become a thing and out of control. They were down to sit there and sit, you know, on a Seiza style, which is like where you're sitting on your legs and your feet are all flat and backwards to count. I was Nihaku Sanjuban. And that basically means 230. I'm number 230. And, oh, wait, that was my prison number. I don't remember. It was 1,000. Sin Hyaku is 1,132. I don't remember. I did wipe that out of my brain. I don't really need to remember it because fuck solitary. That sucked. So the room that I was in before was a group room, and it had a separated bathroom because it had a wall. Because we had a wall with a window in it, so the guards could still see into the bathroom. And typically you could see everybody's head if they were using the flat toilet correctly. I don't know if I explained that either. Like, in all these places now, except for later on. I'll tell you about that one later on. But, like, in the jailhouse, and then also in the... I had a regular toilet in there. That was pretty sweet. Now to think about it, it was back when I got back to prison. It was back to flat toilet life. I had a Western style toilet in the solitary room, but the other room was totally a flat toilet. Like, you had to squat to poop and pee because you didn't want to splash on things and stuff. But yeah, that's the bathroom. But this new room, I don't have a group room separated. It's just a single person. I'd estimate it's like 8 by 12. Maybe a little longer than that, but like it wasn't 9 feet, but I could kind of stretch all the way out and then there'd be some room. I want to say 8. It could have been 6. Now that I think about it. Yeah, I never laid all the way down like that. I could reach that. So it's probably like a 6 by 12. 6 by 12 room. You had a futon. You didn't have like a bed. There's no bed. It was tatami mats, but they're beat up ass tatami mats. I don't know if you know what a tatami mat is, but it's basically like those Japanese floors. And they're kind of hard, but they're soft enough. They're like bamboo, little bamboo things, I think. I think it's a bamboo floor, like sticks, like weird. I don't know. It's some type of grassy looking floor. It looks like grass floor, but it's not grass. It's like brown, dried, but tan. Tatami mat. Just look up tatami mat. I'm not the best explainer, I guess. Describer. Somebody might be able to describe that better. But the room wasn't very big. There was no TV, but there was a radio that would come on typically about 10 in the morning and it would go off at lunchtime. I don't know, about 1, because at lunchtime it switched to some news and then we'd hear the news. It's all in Japanese, so don't think any of this was in English. They weren't doing anything special for me because I was there. They were just playing the same music. Everybody's hearing the same music. The radio would come back on from like 7 to 9, and 9 was night-night time. That was it. You had to go to bed. You couldn't keep reading either. Like, they'd come by and they'd force you to put your book away and go to sleep. You go to sleep. Neteru. Neteru. They want you to go to sleep. Like the dame, sort of dame, dame. And like they had to tell me dame a lot. Like if you're working out, even if you're working out, you think you're going to do some push-ups before you go to sleep, get down the rep in. Nope. Not these motherfuckers. They're going to come by and tell you that's dame. That means don't. Pretty much never don't do that. That's a no-no. That's a no-no. But, yeah, right before they sent me to this place, I don't think I touched on it. Mr. Yamaguchi did die. He died. His wife pulled the plug, and they had sent me to the county. Just like he died just before that, I'm pretty sure that that's when they're like, "Yeah, there's no way around not charging him. We have to bring up charges." Now, whenever you get sent to this other place, the U.S. Embassy sends you a packet in English telling you, "Okay, you're not a forgotten person," and you're like, "Okay, cool." And you read every fucking word of that. You read every word of that, looking for something. To be like, we're going to help you. You don't find anything like that. Nothing like that's in the letter. And then you also get a list of, well, I had already gotten a piece of paper from the guard handing me my charges, which said bodily injury. And I'll be honest with you, I felt like that was a win for me. I was like, yes, that's not as bad as homicide, right? I'm like, yeah, that's good, that's good. So I got a little bit of hope going through me whenever I got that. And then I get the U.S. Embassy pack. I'm like, all right, these people are watching me. They're paying attention to what's going on. And they tell me that they're going to visit me soon. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, man. This is great. I didn't find anything that said they were going to help me, but I just felt they were going to help me. My country was coming to help this guy, this little old me. And in fact, Rez, he's been in Washington for a long time now, and I'm sure he tried to talk to somebody, but there's just not much they can do. And then, you know, you can only pull so many strings to make something happen. And I wasn't dying. I was just in solitary confinement. That's all. I don't know if I went crazy, but yeah, you go crazy. That's one of the main things that people ask me, like, hey, do you go crazy? Like, what do you mean? Like, it's sad. It's upsetting. It's like you're fucking stuck in there. There's nobody to fucking talk to. Yeah, I guess you go crazy. But me, I just kind of focused. At this time, let's not skip ahead on how I killed my time. That'll be something a little later on how I killed my time. But right now, I'm just still getting there. The U.S. Embassy is coming to see me. And I'm kind of happy about that. And I've got these charges. I'm told I'm going to get a lawyer and stuff. So I'm like, okay, this is getting down. There's no way I can imagine at this moment in time that I'm going to be in there for 11 months in that room. Well, they did change rooms one time, but it didn't really matter. They just changed rooms, and then I was still in a different room that looked the same, just on the other side. And I was kind of pissed about the move. Actually, I'd rather be in the other one. That was my room at that point. And they're just changing me up. But I got a brand new clean spanking room, and I got in there, and then like one of the dudes eventually was like, "Hey man, you okay?" I was like, "No, I'm not," because I was in there for a while. But the embassy visited, and then they left. Like they came, and they showed up, they made sure that I was okay, healthy, told me that they were paying attention to my case. I asked like, "Is there any way that I could like serve my time in America?" Because I was like, I'd rather be in America than this situation. I'm in solitary confinement, and it's been a month, and like it's not really cool at all. It's horrible. And they told me you can request that, but you might get more time. Like, what? He's like, yeah, right now you're looking at some lesser crime, lesser stuff. And but he wasn't a lawyer. He had to express that for sure. He did not know what was going to happen. And I only saw that guy two more times. Like, they get sent away. Like, they'll go, you don't even realize how many different places these people go. This guy was talking about, he's in Yemen. I was like, that place, the guy, like, shit went cracking off. He's like, yeah, I was there, man. Like, why do you keep going to these different places? Like, I'm going back to Afghanistan later. Like, all these people, these regular citizens, are really working all around the world in the U.S. Embassy. And there's some characters, you know? But at this point, I'm like a month in. A month into this, he visited. Nothing's really happened court-wise. My family's starting to trickle in to visit my stepmom, Notico. God bless her soul. She visited me once a week. Every week she was there like clockwork. And it was at least a 40-minute train ride. And then you got to stand there, wait for train, get off train, go back to train, you know, bus ride to the fucking spot. So, like, it takes a special person to really come see somebody once a week, every week, consistently for a whole fucking year. And she's my rock. I give Forchi a lot of credit too, because if it wasn't for him being alive and just the hope that his little beautiful soul will be okay when I get home, and hoping that it wouldn't be too long, because I knew something was going to, I didn't think I was going to get all the way off, but I was still hoping I would. I was thinking, I'm going to go home soon, man. These motherfuckers are going to realize, like, I didn't, it's on camera. I didn't do anything. But that's not how the Japanese see things. Like, you did it. There's no, just because it was an accident, doesn't mean nothing. You did it. Like, you didn't mean to do it, but you did it. And I even tried to, like, do guilty so I could just make it faster, and they wouldn't let me do that. They wouldn't even let me do it. They're like, nah, that's not even an option. I'm like, why the fuck not? Like, I'd rather just get it over with. But, you know, after a while, solitary, you're having crazy ideas. But you have those crazy ideas after being in solitary for a month. Now, thank God for the visits. But it was once a week, and it was random from other people. So there was breaks. And those people definitely helped me. Those people visiting me definitely helped, like, me not totally be in solitary completely. You could get letters. You couldn't make phone calls. You could write letters. I wrote a letter every day. I was writing letters to Kaede. I was writing letters to my son. I'd draw Forchi, you know, I'd draw him anime characters from the mangas I was reading or something like that. And that might be why he likes One Piece, because I was always writing, drawing One Piece characters on the letters to him and stuff. And now he likes One Piece. He's reading the English version of it. He sees me reading the Japanese version. And I don't know, I always liked One Piece. And so my dad, like, that was an easy buy for him. Like, he could buy those. And every time somebody visited, they could give you 3 books. And if there's any more, they just had to give you some the next day. But typically, everybody would just bring 3 books. My stepmom, true to form, though, wasn't bringing me books. She was bringing me, she wasn't bringing me fiction books to read unless they were awesome. Like, how am I forgetting his name? Harukami? I don't know, but he wrote some crazy, some gnarly books, like Norwegian Wood. And that was turned into a movie. He's a great writer. It was like IQ 84 he wrote. And there's just gnarly ideas, man. IQ 84 is gnarly. I wish I still had that book, but it's a weird read. You kind of need to be locked in your own head for that. And nobody around you to stay into it. It's a gnarly book. It's a really good book. He's a really good writer. I can't believe I can't remember his name right now. I feel like I'm letting him down. I read a lot of really good books locked up, like all kinds of good books. But at this point, I was just trying to read. I was just trying to read fiction books. Game of Thrones was my shit. Like, I loved Game of Thrones. I reread those books so many times when I was locked up. Like, those are like books that I owned. You could only have so many books, and you could only rent so many books from the library. And then I read every single English book they had in the Tokyo detention center. Like, I read every single one of them. And there's a place that holds thousands of people. They only had, like, 300 English books or something like that. And I read through those things. I was whipping through books like no other. Like, I never have in my life. I was just soaking up information. But it was all fiction stuff, a lot of it. Some nonfiction. But I was getting at my stepmom, Notico. She wouldn't bring me just that. She'd bring me, like, kanji study books. And I got to tell you, the commitment, or just having that, her commitment to teach me Japanese my whole life, and the continued, and also it is a lifelong endeavor to learn Japanese or kanji, essentially the Chinese characters. That's a lifelong endeavor because there's so fucking many. excuse me. But it is a lifelong endeavor because there's like 10,000 of them. The Japanese language, I say I speak, read, and write up to about a fifth grade level, to be honest with you. Like, my speaking goes beyond it, but my grammar and my writing and understanding of grammar probably isn't much more complicated than that, but I can get my message across because their grammar gets pretty gnarly. There's all kinds of stuff. Like, I could say hanasu, that means I speak something like that. Nihongo o hanasu, that means I speak Japanese. Nihongo o hanaseru is I can speak, and then hanasarareru, I think that's I can speak. Hanaseru is I am speaking. And then hanasarareru means I can speak Japanese. So there's different ways to make a word crazy, like Nihongo o hanasemasen. Like, that means I cannot. You know, it's like Spanish. You conjugate your verbs. And that's what can show how strong your Japanese is. And but I can speak, read, and write it, but I know two of the three alphabets by heart, which is hiragana and katakana. But the kanji, that's a motherfucker. Kanji muzukashi yo. That's a rough one. Kanji, it's so many, pretty much. And then a lot of them look alike, and then there's different ways you can add on to them to certain ones. Not really, like, it's not like the 10-10. You can't 10-10 nothing. But embassy visits me once a month. Family's visiting me. Embassy just brings me magazines and stuff. They're typically old and out of date and not interesting, but it's like had some pictures and shit to see. But yeah, Noriko gave me that kanji book, the kanji work, and like the different levels. I should have taken the Japanese like proficiency test right away. I've been a level 3, no problem. I still have some level 2 stuff that I was working on, and then she sent me before she died, and I need to finish that, but I don't really care. Like, I speak it. I don't need to have some test prove it. But if you wanted to be an interpreter or, like, really get a job as an interpreter, you need it. I don't want to interpret Japanese. It's a hard language to interpret. They don't match well. It doesn't even make sense. Like, it's just my mind doesn't even like it. Like, my mind gets mad whenever I see what other people translate it as. Like, that's not what the fuck they said. Because in my mind, I'm accepting a natural Japanese. I learned Japanese from 2 years old. And I just, like, I conflict with what the fuck they connected, because I connected that shit as a child, and, like, it's, sometimes it's just completely wrong to me. It's like, that don't mean that. But it really does at the same time. My sister will see it, and she'll be like, yeah, I guess so. That's, you know, it's hard. And I'm like, yeah, I know it is. So everybody's kind of compliant. Well, they're pretty nice to Japanese people interpreting into English. But if somebody that's an American trying to translate Japanese or English into Japanese for them, oh, it's a conflict. Oh, that's not what it means. That's just, it's not even worth it. Not even worth it. Because I've been there back and forth, and I try to show them my way, and they don't want to see it. So I might be completely wrong, but I wired my wires however I did in my brain. And it might be fucked up, but they have me living in two different countries, and they're complete opposites. Growing up, but now here I am in Japan, but I'm in solitary. The only people I can talk to in the jail is the guard, and pretty much all they do is just drive by. They fucking have one of the workers give you food. You look at them and they're like, hey man, you're fucking American, you're not Japanese. And it's kind of a surprise in their face. Oh shit, who's this dude? A white guy locked up in here, because there's thousands of people they're feeding, and there's this random white guy here, probably some of them like the new ones on the job. Oh shit, there's an American here, because we really don't get to communicate. Those guys probably get to communicate more than us, but I guarantee it's strict as fuck. Like, y'all can talk during exercise and break time, and that's how it is. But essentially, I believe they're prisoners. Like, they've already been convicted, and then that's where they're serving their time. Like, now that I think back on it, because you don't get a job until you're convicted. So those guys, like, I felt like they're volunteers there, and I'm like, how can I get to be one of them? But that's not how it is. Like, they're serving their time. And that's what I figured out. And that's what I think a long time ago. I guess my family couldn't afford a lawyer. And they're trying to raise money, and I'm sure all my buddies back home, Seedless and a couple other guys that I know, they did raise money, and they're giving it to my kid's mom, and she's shipping it over to my dad. And my girlfriend's a little pissed off that I even involved her in it, but I was like, shit, she knows everybody. Like, they don't know you. They're not gonna trust some Japanese girl. You got them fucked up. Like, like your country locked our homeboy up. And you know, you're the girlfriend, not the girl that we've known for fucking ever. So everybody was giving money to Tanisha. And she's a little upset about that, but she's upset about a lot. I was locked up, and I was trying to tell her, you know, I'm going to be out soon. But now she's back home living in my friend's house, and, like, he's trying to get with it. And she's not feeling it, and she moves the fuck out almost immediately. And now my room and my stuff is just abandoned there. And thank God the homie's just a good homie, man. He stored my stuff, like, just stuffed it all in a closet. And then, you know, let my car sit there. And then Pops moved into my room. And, like, you know, problem solved. I lost my room, though. So, like, now I'm, like, a month or two in, maybe 3 months, 6 months. And then life's happening with me gone, you know. The homie gets a girlfriend. She moves in, like, and I'm like, well, I'm probably not going to get to live there when I get out. So I got to think, okay, if I get out, I'll get a place with Kaede or something like that. Fine, whatever. I just want to get out. But these things, like, you know, life's happening, things are moving on. And I'm feeling that my girl's out there living life a little extra without me. And, like, it hurts, it burns. She's writing me, telling me things that she's doing. And I'm like, oh, man. Learning how to skateboard from some dude. Guess what that means? He's hitting it. Like, shit. Like, I'm not stupid. Anybody teaching you how to skateboard, fucking cool to you, and you're hitting it. And I remember her trying to learn how to skateboard in Fiji, and she busted her ass. We were in a mall. She, like, got on the skateboard and thought she was going to go all fucking primitive on it and shit. She fucking flew. That thing flew out from under her. She landed on her ass. To her credit, she laughed about it. She didn't cry. She got up and she's like, oh my God, that hurt. And then when we left, the pain started kicking in. But at the moment, she was too embarrassed to let everybody know that she was crying. But she did good. And then for her to get back on it, kudos to her. Because, you know, skateboarding ain't easy. But I knew she was living extra. And I had it in my head that I was going to break up with her over letter. But I was like, that's just fucking ridiculous. You get out, if anything's happening, then you figure it out and you make a decision from there, because, you know, motherfuckers, I was locked up. You, like, I can't just hate her forever for choosing some dude that's there. Like, I wasn't there. You can only ask somebody to wait for you forever, and, like, it's becoming months and months and months, and she's there for 4 years. Like, and I'd been with her for two, and I was with her for one. And then she was going on a second year, and, like, you know, she's young. Like, a month is a long time. 2 months is a long time. 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, 7 months. And then it really starts getting to 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, 11 months. And then now, like, after 10 months, like, she's telling me, okay, I'm talking to the lawyers, and we got a court date. And it dawns on me that these motherfuckers were waiting for her to get finished with her school in order to have the final court date. Like, but they had, like, 10 court dates of different things. So, I mean, you know, that, oh, shit, eventually I got the letter. I got the letter. They changed my fucking charges from body injury to homicide. And all it said in English was homicide. And it was all in Japanese legal jargon and shit. I bust out my dictionaries and I tried to break it down and shit, but it was legal jargon. I couldn't really break it down as good as I thought I could. Like, there's some complicated ass kanji. Basically, to break down the kanji, if you want to count, you got to count the strokes. If you know how to build kanji characters, you can count how many strokes it took to build that kanji. And then you count, I mean, you go, if it's like 12, it's not that hard, but sometimes it's like 18, 21 strokes. And basically, you count out 21. Welcome back. Well, a phone call demanded that break be taken. I'm back. I was talking about kanji and then counting down the strokes of the kanji and to figure it out. Basically, you count out how many kanji strokes there are. You say that say there's 21. You go look in your dictionary under the group of kanji that's under 21. They will have a grouping. They will have from like 1 through 27 or something along those lines in your dictionary, depending on how good your dictionary is, I guess. But essentially, you go find the number 21. And then you look under there. And if you don't see it, look at the 22, look at the 20. Maybe you counted wrong, but typically you'll find it. If you know what you're doing, you find it. And then you see what the meaning is. And sometimes it's just part of a meaning. And then you got to combine that with another word to make a real meaning or another kanji. So like that kanji might not mean just that. If it's connected to another kanji, you got to find both of those kanji separately and take the Chinese sound and then figure out the word of it. It is, in fact, a thing. It's a thing, bro. It takes effort, and it took a lot of effort to try to break down that legal jargon. And I didn't have the time for it. All I really saw, I mean, I had the time for it. I ain't gonna say that. I was trying. I was like, my brain was fucking killing me from trying to figure it out. And I got a lot of it done, but it turns out it wasn't worth it. Like, my lawyer visited fairly soon while I'm trying to do that, because she had gone to court for me and she knew that they had changed my charges, and then she visited. So then she explained everything through a interpreter, mind you. It was a court appointed interpreter, and she was the one that like interpreted for me during court. So I was kind of sketched out by her. I was like, she could just be working for the judges and stuff. Oh, I forgot to really break down what the damn U.S. Embassy papers said and what I eventually got out of it, like after really reading it through and through again, after giving up on all the hopeful stuff, you read back into it. And I read this one, I just refused to believe it, but they got a 99.6 conviction rate. Let that sink in. The Japanese system has a 99.6 conviction rate on people they decide to press charges against. When it was body injury, I was like, all right, convict me on that. But now the charge is homicide, and they get a 99.6 conviction rate on people they decide to charge. I'm fucked, is what's going through my head. That's absolutely what's going through my head. And now I got 15 years on me. I'm thinking 15 years. And we're approaching court. And I know that I haven't really gone through everything. I wrote down some stuff because there's a lot to break down in 11 months. Let me make sure. Not stress of court. Lawyers interviewing me. Kaede's coming home from Japan. I'm pretty much following this deal pretty right. My dad and my friends, my dad the most, I think. I'm pretty sure he came up with the majority of the money. But they came up with $50,000 to give to the wife, the live-in wife. They weren't even married, but that's his wife. I'm going to respect that, Mr. Yamaguchi. I'm still sorry I took your life, and I'm sorry to his wife, too, for kind of taking him away from her, you know, their life together, whatever. And I apologize for that. That's not something I should joke about at all. I don't want to even like act like I didn't do it. I did it. It was an accident. I was defending my father. We all were in the wrong, but he didn't deserve to die. Like, I just wanted to put him on his ass so we can get out of there. And that's evident in the evidence. It's on camera. It's on the audio, but they don't really understand English, so all they heard was "fuck you." Pretty much. This guy's saying fuck. That's probably a bad word. That's a bad word, right? I was like, get the fuck away from my father. Fuck you. And so that, I don't know. They might have sounded different to them. But I'd seen my lawyer. She told me it was homicide. She's like, don't freak out. We're going to try. They're asking for 15 years. We're asking for 5. I'm like, what do you mean 5? Like, 5 years? Fuck you. I guess that's better than 15, man. I don't want 5 years either. She's like, well, we got to try. And I'm like, oh, man, what the fuck? And so that was our goal. That was what she told me our goal was. And we had a few more months. And she informed me that she was talking to Kaede and that she's going to be a witness at the trial. And there's going to be the two dudes that were surviving were going to be witnesses at the trial. And we're going to go to trial, like, starting in the summer once Kaede got there. And there's no real schedule as to when it's going to finish, but they had a good rough idea. So this is all starting in June, once Kaede could come back, pretty much, because school ends like May 23rd, 28th, something like that. So she came back. We were having court. First time I ever saw her mama, it was when I was handcuffed in court. I was in a suit, I guess, but I was in court. And that's probably not a good impression on mom. But she showed up in support of her daughter, because her daughter was going through some things herself, and she's going to be there. But they showed up for every day of the trial. My sister's mom was there. The wife of the dude was there. There's a bunch of reporters there. There's people in the crowd, that's for sure. It wasn't full room at first, but there's a few days. Like, the trial was when once we had a jury up there. Like, I didn't go to every trial because they're like, we don't want to ship you back and forth for something your lawyer could do. And you don't even understand the language, so you're just kind of sitting there looking dumb any damn way, pretty much what they're thinking. But at the end of it, I was happy that it was almost over, because once I had a court date, I was like, fuck, man. It had been a real, like, 10 and a half months by the time they'd figured all this stuff out. 10 and a half months of sitting in a room by your damn self, not really talking to anybody except for the few people that visited you like 30 minutes a day, and then it's right back to that fucking hole, man. It's the saddest thing in the world, walking back in that hole. Walking right back in there, no, it's just you. It's just you. There's no windows to look out of. There's nothing fun to do. There's you, your books, and studying Japanese. And from the looks of it, you better get real good at fucking Japanese, because you're going to prison. Is what it looks like. You're going to prison for homicide. Because remember that 99.6 conviction rate, guys. I did. I sure as hell remember that. Man. And like, I can only study so many kanji. I was up to like 900 kanji at this point. I was reading pretty damn good. I was good. I was doing my little 15-minute workouts and stuff. But I was getting skinny as fuck. I could see it in the mirror. But I only had like a little hand palm size mirror. Like, it was full palm size. And that's it. And I was on the wall, and it was plastic, and it wasn't very good. I didn't know what I looked like. And people come visit me, and I could just tell on their face that there's a, holy shit, man, you don't look good. Christina visited me. Christina, she was from Japanese club. She visited Japan, and she came and visited me. She's like, you look really skinny. I was really happy to see a friendly face come over there. I didn't want my son to come visit me. See that? No point. He's a baby. He won't even remember it anyway. And then just be the saddest thing in the world. And then Kaede visited, told me she was, going to do what she could and tell the truth and let him know that, I wasn't really fucking trying to be a bad guy. And that's essentially what she went up there and testified. And I guess, let me set up this. There's the courtroom. You walk in, there's the people to the right. There's a whole, the sentencing day, there's a whole shit ton of people. But, leading up, there's about half court filled up. The lawyers that are the prosecution team are sitting across from me, and we have a desk that's facing them. And then to the left side of the room, there's a room they walk in. There's like a full on wall. Like, you're not even, you could, I couldn't even jump up and try to touch none of them. There's no just one judge desk. There's one long, really fabulous looking desk. And, like, they enter one way, and they all sit down, and then they exit the other way. There's two doors. They walk in, they sit down, and they're all sitting in between each other. But there's six well, in between each other. That's not right. They're all sitting across a big row. But what I mean by in between each other, there's judges. There's three judges throughout the middle of the six people. There's nine people up there, nine chairs, nine people, and they're looking down on you. Six of them are jury members. Three of them are judges. They do shit different. And this is apparently new from like 2001 on. But they love their system. It's practically perfect. 99.6 conviction rate. But these guys, even the jury members can ask questions. So whenever Kaede was up there testifying, they asked her a bunch of questions too. And I feel like they liked her statement. And like she even backed me up and said I was a good father and that I had him 50% of the time because I really did. I didn't. So once I had, she had moved in, my kid was still at Fish's house a lot. Like he pretty much he lived there. This kid's been there forever. Those kids are still friends and stuff. But I don't know. She did a good job. And then those other guys got up there and they just basically lied and said we were starting shit. And then like the jury wasn't buying it because they could see the videotape and they're like, why would these guys want to start shit with you? They're walking into the taxi cab and you're following them. And he's like, well, he was talking crazy to me. And she's like, that doesn't mean you can hit him. I didn't hit him. He hit me. I was just yelling. I didn't know it was going to be a physical fight. And it's like, what do you mean you're yelling at people? And calling them fucking bad names, man. Like, you eventually somebody's, they're trying to leave, and you're walking closer and closer and closer to them. And then my dad hit him, and then I hit that guy. So he feels like he got hit by two people, and they're like, well, you did. Okay, they beat you up. And so he's right. And nobody's supposed to hit anybody, right? No matter what you say, right? That's bullshit. Sometimes you get hit for the shit you fucking say. Grow up already. And then the two guys behind him, it just was what it was. I just hit them because they were with them, and I just wanted to knock them down and get on our fucking way. And that's how I saw it, and that's how I explained my testimony. Everybody else saw it quite differently. They saw me as the dude yelling. And it's on camera, though. I'm telling you, like, when my dad punched that dude, I have 1 foot. In the taxi, my girlfriend, I skipped everybody. I said, fuck these people. And I skipped them because we were getting yelled at by these guys. Well, they were getting yelled at. And I walked out. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with y'all? What's going on here? And Kaida's like, these guys are yelling about me asking directions. I'm like, oh, shit, this is stupid. So I grabbed her, put her in there. I was kind of mad at her for even bringing it up. Like, why the fuck? You think my dad don't know how to get home from here? He's been living here, right here. This is his train station. He's been living right here in this town. For fucking ever, but you know, Japanese think, you know, we're all stupid. But he's just been living there so long. I know he knows where he's going, so that was a dumb thing. And that's what they're arguing about. I was kind of mad. I was like, it's pointless. But there's no time to really think about that. I just put her in the tax cab. These guys are being stupid. And she's telling me what, like, trying to explain the whole thing. Like, I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to. And like, I understand. Just get in the tax cab. And I'm telling Dad, get in the tax cab. Get in the taxi cab. And you can hear the audio of that too. And then I'm looking at these guys. My dad's backing up toward the taxi cab. And these guys just keep edging forward. And these other guys may have been edging forward to stop the one guy. I don't know. But they're all edging forward from where they were. And like, I'm at the taxi cab, which means I skipped a line. My dad's edging toward us, passing people up. And all these people are still getting closer and closer. And once Dad hit that dude, I was in. Boom, boom, boom. Grabbed. Dad kind of, you know, pushed him up toward the front seat. Like, get in. We got in. Taxi cab wouldn't leave. I don't know how that's anything to it. Like, I don't know how they saw it different, but they're saying that I was trying to hurt somebody. Like, I knew what I was doing. I'm a registered gun carrier in America. He admits to training and exercising. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, I admitted to exercising. What the hell is going on here? And they painted me in the worst light, essentially. At the end of the day, everybody testified. My dad testified. My stepmom, Notico, testified as a character witness and just kind of said that he's been a good kid, like, all this time or whatever. You know, went up there, see him bring it. They didn't know anything about my youth. Lock up in training school, thank God, because they'd have thrown the hammer at me if they'd known about all that shit. But that's locked away. They couldn't find that out. But she went up there, so I was, you know, told him about my relationship with Japan and stuff, and like, you know, he's never been in no trouble here. Like, he's been here all his life, and this is the first time he's ever been in trouble, so give him a little bit of leniency. Like, he's been coming here all his life. This is not his first visit to Japan. He just got so crazy. Like, he's that crazy. Like, the first day he's here, he gets arrested. No, that's not his style. She did a really good job. Thank you, Notico. Thank you, Kaede. Thanks, Dad, for everything. And thanks to my friends and family for raising so much money to try to help, because basically what the lawyers had pretty much negotiated to the wife, that if we come up with $100,000, I could walk. So money talks. So we were raising money, and I was sitting in a damn cell, but everybody else is out here doing a pretty good job donating, chipping in, doing something. I don't think I had any free Frank t-shirts, nothing like that going around, but people were chipping in. Like, there's no point. Those shirts are, that's just kind of a show. Just chip in the money. You don't need to do all that for it. Just chip in the money. And they raised $50,000. Cut a long story short, huh? They raised $50,000, and they gave that to the wife. She cashed that check, wrote a letter to the judge, and eventually, after all the testimony and stuff, we figured out that July 4th was going to be the sentencing day, or the day of the outcome. Like, not necessarily the sentencing day. I thought it was going to be my Independence Day. I go in there, high hopes. Everybody's there. Court's full of people. They're like snickering at me, getting some hissy ass sounds. There's people, I get the feeling nobody likes me in there, and everybody likes this guy. I'm like, oh fuck, man. And I feel the negative energy. And then they all come in, and then they make me stand at the podium in the middle of all the desks and the people behind me and the wife behind me. And I'm looking up at the judges, and like, I got the earpiece in, but I can understand Japanese, and he's reading Japanese, and this lady's trying to translate it into my shit, into my ear. And basically what he does, he sentenced me to 2.5 years. He based, so out of the 5 years, so we were asking for five. And we had proven our case, what he said, like we had proven that we didn't mean to be injuring anybody. So we're not going to do 15 years. We're going to do 5 years. I'm like, oh, fuck, we're getting 5 years. Oh, my God. But he's like, since y'all came up with the money and the wife asked for leniency, we're going to give you half of that. You came up with half the money, you get half the 5 years, 2.5 years, bye. I just got convicted on Independence Day for homicide. And I guess I'm lucky, man. Like, I got 2.5 years. But so, you know what? Like, honestly, when he said 2.5 years, I could do 2.5 years. Out of 15 years that I was facing, when it got broke down to 2.5, honestly, I feel like I was given a fair trial. I can't bitch about that. I can't whine about it. The letter essentially was like, hey, I know he didn't, I don't think he meant to do this essentially, but he does need to think about what he did for a little while. And that was the gist of it. So they had to put me away for something. And that's when they sentenced me. And then that's when I get sent to the real prison. And I guess that's part of this, but I think right now I'm gonna call this for this show, for this episode anyway. The jury convicted me for homicide, and July 4th was the day they decided to do it. I'm looking at the time right now, and I'm thinking I might be able to jog up something from that day. We're at like 19 minutes for this half. I'd like to make it an hour. I think it got cut short, like 25 minutes earlier, but I don't always do long episodes. And I think we got to a good point right now. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah, I just jarred the memory. So right after court, Kaide wanted to see me. Now I'm getting sentenced for 2.5 years, and she's got another 2 years left in America. I've been thinking about this. I felt like she was cheating on me and shit. I didn't confirm it, nor did I even try to. But whenever she got in there, like we had our little talk, and she's like, "I'm so sorry." We cried. Like, I tried. Don't worry about it. And she's like, "I'll be waiting for you." I was like, "Really? Will you be waiting for me? You're gonna really do that? Like, I want you to live your life in like your last 2 years in college, pretty much." She was like her college life. I was like, you don't have to do that. Basically, so I broke up with her. She didn't want to. She's all crying. I'm crying. Like, I got tears in my eyes thinking about it because she was a really good person and I hate to break her heart like that. But she needed it. She needed me to break up with her so she could go fucking live and guilt free too, like just without fucking guilt of like cheating on me. Because I found out later she absolutely was cheating on me. So like I don't know why. You know, I mean I get it. She didn't think I knew probably at that time. And then it, you know, shit gets out eventually. Like we're all friends. Eventually it gets out, and I could tell. Like one of the pictures that she had taken with this dude, even when we were together, that they liked each other. Like, I was like, oh, y'all like each other. Look at that. Look at that picture. Look at the way you're looking at him. Oh, shit. You like him. She's like, no, I don't. No, I don't. And I called it. He's a young, good-looking dude from the Middle East with money. He's probably kicking with my chick almost all the time, teaching her how to skateboard and shit, you know, with all that. Well, I don't think he was one. I think he's some other white kid. But I know she went and hung out with him. I think the skateboard kids were actually pretty nice, and that guy was the little snake in the grass, tell you the truth. But I broke up with her, and it was heartbreaking to her from what I could see. Like, she was, oh my God, I can't believe you do this to me after I came here just to testify for you. I'm like, I'm doing this for you, whether you know it or not. I'm a fucking old man. You're a young, beautiful woman. You need to just go live your fucking life. I'm in prison. You can still write me, which she did not. She did eventually. Like it was like it took a long time. She said so in the letter. She's like, it's taken a long time for me to write this letter, but thank you for, you know, just breaking up with me and being the more mature person. And then you know, but I didn't get that letter for a long time. And I was heartbroken about how I went about it. And everybody told me I was stupid and told me she'd waited for me, at least been there when I got out, if I had kept that going. But it was heartbreaking to be locked up, having those goddamn feelings of fucking jealousy, knowing she's out there, thinking that she's out there fucking somebody else is toxic. It was super toxic to my soul, and I didn't have the energy for it. I really didn't have the energy for that shit. And like, I just had to break up with her because. It was heartbreaking, as heartbreaking as it was. I had her right there. That was the only time I was gonna have her right there. And good God, don't you think I wanted that to be like a beautiful, oh fuck, I want you moment. I wish I could hold you moment. Yeah, I'd love to have the smiley Kai day and be like telling me it's gonna be okay, everything's gonna be fine. No, it wasn't. It wasn't gonna be fine. It was gonna be hard. I'm about to spend a lot of time. I'm going to labor prison, what they call it. I'm like, what the fuck is that going to be like? I have no fucking clue. I didn't have time for that. And I know I didn't want to break up with her over letter because that was the only form of communication. So I pulled the trigger, did it, and I'm happy I did it. And she ended up being happy she did it. I wish we were still together. She was pretty cool person if it had worked out that way because I was going to marry her. And that's kind of. I mean, not now. Not now that I know she's cheating on me and stuff like that. But if it everything had gone straight, you know what I mean? Like everything. Now that I know what I know, I'd never get back with her, nothing like that. But if it everything had gone without the jail thing, we'd have gotten married. We would have gotten married. Absolutely, would have done it. Would have made babies with her. She'd have been a good mom. But she got to go live her life though, essentially, and she really did. She got to go live her life and have fun in San Diego, California, guilt-free. And she, you know, she got to just cut me off. And she was mad at me. And typically, that's how a good, healthy person moves along. You don't just hold on to like your ex-boyfriends and stuff. You just cut them off, boom, move on with your life. And she did that to an extent. To an extent, she did that. But I'm sure it was a burden because she was there. She saw that dude get fucking hurt. So that's still a traumatic situation to see someone. Pretty much get taken out. I think that was a good memory jogging thing. I'll tell you next episode about the transition from being in solitary to going to where you're going to go to prison, immediately being given a little dumb job. And then, like, the wait until you go to your prison and they don't tell you where you're going to go. So you're just left there speculating. But I'll tell you about that next episode, and that'll be actual talk and talk about the real, what it's really like to be in there. And then I'll explain the rooms there and the buildings and how it is. And that way I can remember too, because there's some random stuff. And I didn't even talk about like in the solitary, how you got to bathe. It was like twice a week, twice a fucking week. And that's not enough. You know what I mean? Like, I want to bathe more than that. I think in the summertime, we got to bathe 3 times a week because it's hotter. There's no AC. There's no heater. Like, if it's cold and it does get cold, it's cold. And the insulation ain't very good. They give you 2 blankets. You can't cover yourself up, like, through the day, but you can have a nap. You can, in the middle of the day, like, in the middle of the day, every day, we would have a nap. You got to think, we had old men in there, too, so we'd have a nap. And I'd take advantage of shit. I've been up since 5 in the morning reading, studying, and then I'd lay down with a book, and I'd pass out, and then they'd, you know, nice, soft, doom, 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 wake you back up. And, all right, I guess it's time to sit back at this little bitty desk and stare at the wall. That's really a lot. There's a whole lot of wall staring, man. A whole lot of wall staring, thinking thoughts on businesses, that business ideas that I want to do. Most of those were fucking bullshit. I've come out and I've gotten better ideas since then. I still have one that could be awesome. It could be awesome. But I want to be balling. That way we could do it right for everybody that I show how to do it. Yeah, I think now that's a good one. Yeah, the Kaede, that was sad. Breaking up with her was the saddest thing. It was so sad. All right. Until next time, ciao.